So the Gemara sets it up that there's a basic distinction between money versus a physical item, like an axe. By money, the moment I give you the money, you could spend it anytime you want. So therefore, in terms of ones, that money is yours and you're therefore liable. Masha'in Kane. However, with an axe, because an axe is intended for its usage, so therefore, the only time that the liability kicks in is only when you start using it. Okay. Huh? No. You don't give back the money. The only thing the Gemara is entertaining is that as long as the borrower is physically holding on to the money, maybe the borrower is not going to be liable for ones. But once he starts making usage of the money, so then he would be chai for ones. But the Gemara again now concedes that that's not so. Meaning that by ones he's liable right away, just like when you borrow an item. It's just now the only issue is a question of retraction. Now, name a ketanai. Here we go. We are going to be seeing today Brisa. A total today of three Brisas, where once again the question is going to be this statement to Rav. Rav says that your Mekash B'milva, Eina Mekudeshes, is going to be subject to a Machlokas Tanayim. So let's begin. What do you mean? I'm not understanding.
If the borrower reneges, he just pays back the loan. That's it. End of story.
If the borrower reneges, no, we're not talking about defaulting on a loan. We're talking about when the borrower actually takes liability. And when the loan is considered has begun. So the two time points are going to be when I physically hand you the money, or when the borrower makes usage of the money. That's really the only issue the Gemara is dealing with right now. We're not talking about the default. Okay. The Gemara starts off. We are towards the bottom of Mimzayin Amud Beis. Name a ketanai. Here we go. A brisa that is going to seemingly weigh in on this discussion of whether or not a man can be mekadesh a woman with a milva. He's kashli b'shtar chov o shaylo milva b'yad acherim v'hir shaleihem. Let's say there's a simple shtar chov, and the way we'll explain the Gemara right now is she owes him money, and it's documented. Or Shailam Milva Biyad Achirim. Or let's say he had an account receivable by somebody else. And what does he do? He just simply hands it over to her. So he basically hands her over an IOU. He hands her over a bond. And Rameir Omer Mekudeshes V'Chachamim Omer Mena Mekudeshes. So Machlok is between Rameir and the Chachamim. Rameir say the Kedushin is a valid Kedushin. And the Chachamim say the Kedushin is not going to be a valid Kedushin. Okay, now, already you're getting the sense that there's a machlokus over here whether or not a person can be mekash with a loan or not. So,
a loan document.
We're going to be covering that right now. Now, ha'sharchov hechidami ilay misharchov da'acherim haynu milva b'yad acherim. So the Gemara says now when it says sharchov, so it can't be talking about an IOU from somebody else, because then the brisa would be repetitive. The brisa is giving us two cases: one being a sharchov, and the other one being an IOU from somebody else. Which is the same thing. So el alav sharchov dida. So it must be that the first case of the brisa is talking about, like the way I set it up, is that the loan is the borrower is her. She owes him money. Over mekash b'milva kemiflagi. And what is the source of this debate is whether or not you could be mekash with a loan. And now it comes out that the statement of Rav is machlokus between the Rabbi, between the Chacham and Rameir. And again, the Gemara would like very much to deflect and say that what Rav is saying is universally held. So the Gemara will say like this: La olam sharchov de'acherim. So the Gemara says no. What we're discussing over here is where it is an IOU from somebody else, and you're just handing that over to her. V'hacha b'milva b'shtar u'v'milva apeka miflugi. And over here, we're just simply talking about two types of loans. One being documented and the other one being an oral loan. U'v'milva b'shtar mayplugi. And now that we are avoiding the whole issue of where she's a borrower, because if she were the borrower, the loan for sure would not be able to work. Now, we have to explain two issues, meaning we're setting up the brisa. The brisa is discussing two types of loans, one being documented and the other one being an oral loan. So, let's start off with a documented loan. what is the machlokus over here between the Tanakam and Rameir regarding a documented loan? The Gemara is going to give us four different ways to explain what exactly is at the source of this machlokus. So, number one, by my pligi, the pluga de Rebbe v'Rabbanan kemilflugi de Tanya osios niknas memesiris de Rebbe v'chachamim omrim bein shiksav v'lo maser bein shemaser v'lo ksav lo kana achiyichtov v'imsor. Okay, Mar Islay the Rebbe, Umar Leislay the Rebbe. Issue number one, or machlok, the svara number one in terms of explaining the machlokus. I want to give a bond over to somebody else. So now that I'm no longer the bondholder, but now he is the bondholder, I'm no longer the lender, he's a lender. So how do I do that? What is the mechanism in which this happens? This is a machlokus between Rebbe and the Chachamim. Rebbe says, you know how it happens? It's very simple. I take the note, I hand it over to him, done. Osios niknos b'mesira. The letters themselves are actually transferable, and they could be transferred by just me handing over the note. Even though I am the designated lender on the note, but I also have that ability to give that over to somebody else. And how does it work from a Kenyan standpoint? According to Rebbe, I hand over the note. The letters are transferable. The note's transferable. That is the opinion of Rebbe. And the Chachamim say no. If you want to transfer over a note to somebody else, so you have to A, transfer over the note, and B, write a supplementary document as well saying, I'm transferring you over the note. Meaning you can't do a kinyan with the note itself because you're the bondholder. So you can't do a transfer with the note itself. You have to give over the note and another shtar delineating that you're transferring over the note. According to the Chachamim, that in only that is the way to transfer over a note. And now the Gemara says, that's the machlokes between the Tanakam and Rav Meir. Whereas the Tanakam says, it's not going to work because the Tanakhama subscribes to this idea that handing over a note to somebody else is simply not an effective transfer. Or a mayor would say, it is an effective way of transferring. That's number one. Number two, Ebay Zemet Kulam Aleslu de Rebbe. Everyone is in agreement that we don't hold of Rebbe. V'hacha b'derav papa kemiflegi, and over here, what is the subject of machlokes between the Chacham and Rav Meir is the statement made by Rav Papa. Da'am Rav Papa ha'iman de'zavin shtar l'chavre. If a person would like to sell a note to somebody else, sarach l'michtav lei k'ni lach v'chol shibuda. I'm going to transfer over the note and all the shibudim with the note as well. Meaning, we know that together with the note, you also have shibudim. Meaning, if you're a bondholder, if you're a note holder, and you have the right to collect, not only do you have the right to collect from him, but there's a shibud. There is a lien against all the properties that the borrower has as well. And Rav Papa says, if you're transferring over a note, so, again, everyone does not agree with Rebbe, so you just can't hand over the piece of paper. You must hand over the piece of paper with a supplementary document. And that supplementary document has to have in it written the words, I'm transferring you over the loan, and the shibudim as well. And if you fail to include that in the supplementary document, it's simply not going to work. That's Rav Papa's statement. Now, Mar Islay de Rav Papa, Mar Islay de Rav Papa. And that's Machlokes between Rav Meir and the Chachamim, whether or not they subscribe to the rule of Rav Papa. That is number two. Number three, Ibai Zema de Kuleama Islu de Rav Papa. So now in number three, everyone subscribes to the rule of Rav Papa. That in the supplementary note, when you are transferring the note over to somebody else, you also have to write and attach with it a supplementary note. And in the supplementary note, you have to write that I am acquiring for you the loan and the shibudim as well. And over here, what's that issue? Is the rule of Shmuel. The Amr Shmuel. The rule of Shmuel goes like this. Question becomes the following question. I'm a note holder. I'm now transferring over the note to somebody else. And let's say I did the transfer correct. Right, I wrote a supplementary document. I included in the supplementary document the words that I'm going to be coined to you, the note, the obligation, and the shibudim. I do everything correct. Now, Shmuel says, now me, the original note holder, I could do the following. Now, I know it's not nice, but Shmuel says, but it works. It's effective. And that is, I could still forgive the note. I still have the ability to forgive the loan, even though I handed it over to somebody else. Now, No, no. Even if it was a documented loan, I could still forgive the note. Right now, we're only discussing documented loans. Later, we're going to be discussing the oral loan. Right now, we're explaining the documented loan. I understand. And Shmuel, it makes you now realize how big a chiddush Shmuel is saying. Shmuel is saying, I still have the right to forgive the loan. Even after he signed it over to somebody else, that's correct. Now, right, that is the correct reaction. That's the reaction of understanding. Ethical? No. Effective? Yes. Now, why should that be? In other words, just from a halachic standpoint, how can I do that? Bothers Martin. What gives me? Well, I'm not discussing the ethics of it right now. I'm just discussing the mechanism. What's the mechanism which allows me, the original note holder, to be able to forgive it, even though I've assigned it over to somebody else? Tosfos on the top of the Amud says Yesh Mefarshim, the very top Tosfos on Mem Ches Amud Aleph, Hainu Taima De Machlo Machol Mishum De Kinyan Shtar Eino Ela Midrabanan, because from a conceptual standpoint, transferring over a note to somebody else, min ha-Torah, doesn't work. This is all a rabbinic institution that you have the ability to transfer over a note. V'lo alam lafkeh kocharishon shalo yuchalim choloso v'chei mashpa beperek mishameis dikinyin shoros enu alam midrabanan. And the Gemara Baba Basra also gives us the indication that this is only working on a rabbinic level. Now, why, in other words, it only then lends to the next question. Why, when the Chachamim made this institution of assigning note to somebody else, why didn't they restrict the note holder, the original note holder, from being able to forgive the loan? I don't know. Meaning, it would seem like it's within their power to do so, and for whatever reason, they didn't do so, but that's Tosus' understanding. So since min ha-Torah, the Torah doesn't recognize such a sale, the Torah doesn't recognize a transfer, this is only done because of a rabbinic institution, so therefore the Chachamim still allowed the original note holder the ability to forgive the loan. Okay, and just I should have read two more words in the Gemara. Vafilo, three more words. Vafilo Yorish Mochel. And Shmuel says, not only does the original note holder have the ability to forgive the loan, but let's say the original note holder dies, and now the estate goes down to the children. The children now, who are now the owner of the estate, they too can also forgive the loan as well. So that is a far-reaching ability that's given to the original note holder and even the yorshim of the original note holder. Now the Gemara says, "Mar Yisle Deshmul, Mar Yisle Deshmul." And now the machlokes between the Chacham and Rav Meir is a question of whether or not we subscribe to the rule of Shmuel or we don't subscribe to the rule of Shmuel. Now let's think both sides of this debate. If you subscribe to the rule of Shmuel, so then the woman is handed over a note as her kedushin. She's looking at it, right? She's going to be owed a lot of money, but you know what? That guy who is just mekadesh me, he can forgive at any point in time. So if you subscribe to the rule of Shmuel, so the woman now realizes it could be worthless what I'm holding right now. And you know what? If I'm going to be mekadesh to you, you're going to give me something that has real value right now. And if you don't subscribe to the rule of Shmuel, so then that piece of paper is worth something. And it cannot be rendered worthless by her husband. So that is explanation number three. Explanation number four. The Ebi Zemed Gulam is Leid Shmuel. Everyone subscribes to the rule of Shmuel. The Hacha B'ishi Kemiflugi. Over here, if we're subscribing to the rule of Shmuel, so what's the machlokas? The machlokas is basically the level of comfort of this woman. It's basically now going to be a question of how comfortable she is having received this note. Meaning, because even though Shmuel says that the original note holder can forgive the loan, but we're not talking about just any original note holder. We're not talking about her new husband. Is her new husband going to do that to her? So the Chachamim's opinion is she's not worried. It's her husband. Her husband wouldn't do that to her. And Rav Meir would say, nah, she's still, Other way around. I'm sorry. Right. The Chachamim would say that she's worried. Yeah, that correct. The Chachamim say that she would be concerned that her husband is going to forgive the loan, and Rameir says no, she's not going to be worried. Okay, that is four different explanations of explaining the machlokes between the Chacham and Rameir regarding what if the kedushin that's given to her is a note, and it's just now a question of four different ways of explaining the machlokes between the Chacham and Rameir.
What's the possibility that regardless of the law, maybe the shtar itself, the paper, has the value of shtar pusha that?
That's coming up later. Excellent, and we're going to be discussing that later this morning. Now, the Ubimilva Alpeh. Now, in the Braisa we said there were two types of notes. One was a documented note, and the other one was an undocumented note. So now we have to explain the machlokes regarding the undocumented note. But my pligi b'derav huna marav, damar rav huna marav, manali biyadecha, tenu laploni b'mama shloshtan. So the way that we're going to explain the secondary machlokas, the one regarding an undocumented loan, so it goes like this. Let's say I owe Martin $100. Let's say Ben owes me $100. The three of us are together, and I say, you know what? And everything here is oral. It's oral loans. So I say, you know what? Mama shloshtam. Three of us are together. You know what? Cut me out. Meaning, I owe Martin, you owe me, you owe Martin. Okay, so, and b'mama shloshtam, kana. So, and that is a kinyan in of itself. It is equivalent to, in our modern terminology, a handshake. Meaning, even though nothing was... There was no Maisa Kenyan. That's simply a halacha that was delineated by the Chachamim. If you remember the Gemara in Gittin, I'll be perfectly honest, Rashi kick-started my memory. I didn't by myself, I didn't remember it, but then the Rashi reminded me that the Gemara in Gittin says that there are three halachas which are given below Tam, meaning it's kind of hard to explain how it works, but it works. And this is one of them. Now, if you ask me what are the other two, so then I'll tell you I need to look back in the Gemara in Gittin. But for our purposes, it's hard to explain how it works, meaning the mechanism, because there was no actual kinyan that was done, but... it works. It facilitates business, meaning it allows things to happen much quicker. So the question now becomes: do you subscribe to this rule of Rav Huna Amarav? Mar Saver Ki Kama Rav Hani Mila Bikadon Aval Milva Lo or Mar Saver Lo Shna Milva Lo Shna Bikadon? And then the Gemara says that's exactly the issue over here. Is this going to be true by just a pikadon, or can it be true regarding a milveh as well? And the Gemara says that's the machlokes between the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir. Okay, so where are we right now? We have a machlokes. We have a statement by Rav that mekash b'milveh in a mekudeshes. The Gemara brought in a brisa. The brisa seems to suggest that's a machlokes tanayim, and the Gemara deflected. There is no machlokes tanayim regarding if she is the borrower and the kedushin is going to be done through his forgiveness of the loan. We are all in agreement it's not going to work, like Rav says. And then this issue, this brisa that we just finished discussing, was a question of you're handing her a note owed by somebody else, and you're handing that to her as the kedushin. And as we explained, four different ways to explain the machlokas regarding documented loan, one way to explain the undocumented loan. Name a ketanai. Here we go, brisa number two.
Is there any time frame involved?
Meaning what? Meaning...
how long can you wait if you want to forgive or not forgive or...
Until the satisfaction of the loan.
Is it a year or is it a day?
Whatever. In other words, the loan itself usually has a term on it. So, but as long as the loan is outstanding, the original owner, according to Shmuel, can forgive it. Name a ketanai. The Gemara now is going to suggest another brisa, and again, it's going to basically be the same discussion, where we're going to present the brisa. Now it's going to sound like the statement of Rav is going to be subject to a machlokas tanaim, and again, the Gemara is going to do maneuvering, so it is not reflective on Rav's position. So first, let's introduce ourselves to the brisa. He's kashul bishtar. Man says to woman, I want to be mekadesh you with a document. Rav Meir Omer in Mekadeshes, Rav Elazar Omer Mekadeshes. So, machlokes tanaim between Rav Meir and Rav Elazar. V'chachamim Omer Shamim Mesanir. And the Chachamim say, well, there's a piece of paper involved. How much is a piece of paper worth? If the paper itself has value, has actual real value, kedushin is valid. Because again, a man has to be mekashen woman with something that is worth a shava pruta. As long as the paper has is worth a shava pruta, so then you're good. Otherwise, the kedushin is not going to be a valid kedushin. Now, hashtar hechidami. Now, the Bryce is relating to a shtar. What kind of shtar are we talking about? Now, it cannot be a note that is where there. It's another borrower, meaning what we've been discussing previously. And why can't it be? Because then the two Reb Meirs don't agree, meaning the Reb Meir that we just got exposed to and the Reb Meir of the previous Bryce. They're stating the opposite opinion, and that can't be. So, Ela b'shar chov dida. So, who must be the borrower? It must be her. And what is the subject of the machlokas now? Subject of the machlokas must be whether or not a man can be mekadesh a woman by forgiving an obligation that she owes him. And now, what it comes out is that this statement of Rav is subject to a machlokas tanayim. So, once again, now the Gemara is going to deflect. Here, three ways of explaining the brisa, and doing in all three ways, we are deflecting. One, Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Chacham bar Ma'aseh Kedushin Kegon Shekisha B'Shtar Shein Alav Eidim. So, first way to explain it. And the first way to explain it, in other words, we recently finished Gittin, although it's not so recent now, but we recently finished Gittin, and you knew this was coming because who are the two principal Tanaim in this Braisa? Rav Meir and Rav Elazar. When you hear Rav Meir and Rav Elazar, after having gone through Masechta Gittin, the first thing that should come to your mind is what is koreis? What creates severance between a man and a woman? Is it Edei Chasima or is it Edei Mesira? The Gemara now says that's the machlokus over here. We're talking about a shtar where, and it's a regular shtar kiddushin, meaning it's not a note, it is a contract to effect kiddushin. And the problem with this particular contract, there are no witnesses who signed on the contract itself. He handed it to her in front of two witnesses, but no witnesses signed on the contract. Rameir Latame Damre de Chasim Ekarte, and now everything lines up perfectly. Rameir is of the opinion that without the witnesses signing on the document, it is simply not an effective document. And Rav Elazar Latam and Damar Eidim Mesira Karte. And Rav Elazar is of the opinion that no, the only reason why you have witnesses signing on the document is what we discussed back in Gittin, Tikkun Olam, only as a safeguard measure. But principally, a document, in order to give it, to give it its effectiveness, only needs witnesses seeing the transfer of the document. Now, that's the machlokas between Rav Meir and Rav Elazar, and here in this braisa it works out perfectly, and Rabbanan, and as far as the Chachamim are concerned, Mesafka Lehu Ika Rav Meir Ika Rav Elazar, they are equivocating which position they're subscribing to. Hilkach Shem Esanir, Yimesh Bo Shev Aprut, Mekudeshes V'Yim Lav, Eina Mekudeshes. And now, the only thing they're left to discuss is the paper itself. If the paper has a value of a Sheva Pruta, the Kedushin is valid. Otherwise, the Kedushin is not going to be valid. Or, really, it's a suffix, but okay. Two, second way of explaining the machlokas. Or maybe as follows. Maybe this shtar was written, but not with her in mind. Meaning, he wrote the kedushin document before notifying her that he wanted to marry her. Debai Reish Lakish Star Eris and Shikatsu Shalashma Mahu Havayu Letzia Makshina and Mayitzia Bein Lashma Havayu Nami Bein Lashma. Now, when it comes to a get, we know we've discussed a good part of Masechta Gittin, knowing that halacha. When you write a get, it has to be lishma. That is one of the requirements of a get. So now that's true by a document that divorces. Is that also true by a document that creates marriage? Does that also have to be written lishma? Or maybe no. Maybe there's a fundamental difference. And how do we know that there's a fundamental difference? Look, because when you're a Mekadesh woman with money, was that money minted lishma? Did you go over to the U.S. Mint and say, look, I want to be Mekadesh her, do me a favor, mint me a coin with her in mind? Of course not. Meaning Kesef doesn't have to be lishma, so maybe the shtar by Arison also doesn't need to be lishma. So Basar Dabai, Hada Pashe, question was asked, but then the question was answered. V'yatza v'haisa, makesh avaya leitzia, mar isle de reish lakish, mar leisle de reish lakish. Reish Lakish says, I asked the question, but I'm answering the question. I'm firmly in the position that just like a get has to be lishma, the shtar erusin also has to be lishma. And this is now the machlokus in the brisa between the Tanakam and Rameir of whether or not they subscribe to Reish Lakish or not. A third way to explain the brisa is the kulam isla de Reish Lakish. Everyone subscribes to Reish Lakish's position that a shtar erusin has to be written lishma. She wrote a lishma, but not telling her. Meaning, he went to the sofer and he said to the sofer, "That's the one. I've identified who I want to marry. I just haven't told her yet. But it's lishma." Uva plotu the rav v'ravina v'rav papa v'rav shravya kemiflegi. And now the debate goes as follows: Deidmar kasvul lishma v'shalom idata rav v'ravina amar mekudeshes rav papa v'rav shravya amar mekudeshes. This is a machlokas amoraim where it is written lishma. The sofer knows exactly who it's going to be. It just is that he hasn't told her yet that it's her. And then machlokas amoraim whether or not such a document would be effective.
If there's no consent on her part, how could Rabbi...
Well, the only way it's going to work, we are not talking about whether the marriage will not work without her consent.
Right.
The only thing that we're asking is whether or not the shtar would be effective once she does concede. Meaning, because according to some amoraim, her consent has to occur before the writing of the document. Even if it was written lishma, meaning the sofer knew who it was going to be, but, you know, he hasn't courted her yet. So, some amoraim are of the opinion that that too is not going to, as a document, not going to work. Name a kahani tanai, ditanya. Okay, now, Round three, we're going to be discussing another brisa, and ostensibly, again, it's going to be the same type of discussion. We're going to introduce ourselves to our brisa. Seemingly, the pshat of the brisa is whether or not a man can be mekayesh a woman with a loan is subject to a machlokas tanayim, and then Rav's rule is going to be subject to a machlokas tanayim, and then the Gemara is going to deflect. It's the same structure. Name a kahani tanai detanya. The Gemara quotes the following brisa: Asala shirayim nizamim v'tabaos v'akadesh ani lach. Woman goes over to a man and says, "Look, I'm interested, but here's the story. I'd like a ring." And the man is skilled in making jewelry. I'll give you the raw material. So the raw material is coming from the woman. So he's not sponsoring the raw material. She is actually providing the raw material. And he's going to craft it into jewelry. And I'm going to be, she says to him, I'll be mekudeshes to you with the ring that you crafted for me. Now, the assumption is that once he crafts it, its value is going to be much worth more than it was in its raw state. And so with that additional value, he's being mekadesh with her. So, the way the brisa presents is that according to Rav Meir, the moment that the man crafted the jewelry, the kedushin works. Now, you and I know that as Ramirez presents himself, can't be. Meaning, before he hands it to her, it's impossible to understand. So, let's wait a moment. The Gemara is going to raise that issue. And according to the Chacham, the condition is not going to be good. Achegia mamon liyada. So, it's not going to be good until the money goes to her. Now, hi mamon hechidam. Ilei osa mamon. So, now, what does that mean, mamon? Until the money goes to her, what money are we talking about? Are we talking about the actual jewelry itself? Mechlal tatanakam asafar. I feel also mama on name lo. Ella b'mai bo mekadasha. So if he didn't hand her the ring yet, so then how do you understand the opinion of Rav Meir? Where Rav Meir says the moment he fashions it, the kedushin is valid, even before he handed it to her yet. So then how was he mekadasha? So it must be we're talking about other money. Now, what exactly is the issue over here? So, the Gemara now is going to set up the machlokas and it's going to go like this. So the Gemara says like this. If I'm given a job to do, a skilled job, and I'm going to get paid for the work that I'm going to do. So, there's a basic machlokas that comes up again and again throughout Shas, and that is, how do I view my payment? Is my payment accrued incrementally so that I put in another pruta's worth of value into my work, so that is money owed to me. I put in another pruta, and that money's owed to me. And I keep working on it, and incrementally, as I increase the value of it, that is more money that is owed to me. Now, if that's true, so she owes him money for the work. But when she owes him money for the work, by the time the work is done, how is that money viewed? As an outstanding obligation. A loan. And the Gemara says, Vahave Milva. So that means now that if we're looking at the payment correctly, so that means that the money now that she owes him is basically no different than a milva. So my la bahakamiflagi, and now this could be very well be the machlokus between Rav Meir and the Chachamin. Mar Savra Mekash ben Milva Mekudeshes, and Mar Savra Mekash ben Milva and Mekudeshes. Okay, so this is it. So this now is a machlokus. But we don't want this, because then it would mean that the statement of Rav is subject to a machlokus tonight. So the Gemara says, love. Gemara says, no. And here, once again, the Gemara is going to deflect in one of three different ways. So the Gemara says, the first way to explain the machlokus is a question of, how do we look at tzchiras? How is his wages going to be viewed? So, Mar Savra, one's of the opinion, we're on the top of Menchesim and Beis, Ein al tzchiras ela b'sof, Umar Savra, yesh al tzchiras mitchila v'yatsof. So, one way to view it is that wages are accrued incrementally, so that means at the end of his service, all that money she owes him is an outstanding obligation. And if all he's doing is just forgiving that obligation, that's being mekash with a loan, and you can't do that. Whereas the other position is no, that if the wages are not accrued incrementally, but rather the money is only owed at the end. Well, at the end, well, that's not a loan, that's money that's due right now. So that's not the forgiveness of a loan, but that's actually being mekadesh with money that's current. And that's one way to explain the machlokas. Or the Gemara says, no, that really we can view, the way to look at wages is that it's incrementally accrued. And let's assume, like Rav, that you cannot be mekadesh with a milva. And over here, the question becomes the following. The jeweler, who is going to turn into a husband. So, obviously, when he takes the raw material and he makes jewelry out of the raw material, the question on the table becomes the following. He obviously increased its value. Who is the owner of that increased value? Your two options are either the jeweler himself, he's kone b'shvakli, he now is the owner of that, and what he's doing when he gives it back to her is he's transferring that over to her. Or no. The increased value of that item belongs to the owner of the raw material. And the owner of the raw material obviously is going to pay for the services that were provided, for the craft that went into it, but the owner of that shvach is going to be the owner of the raw material.
Can you argue a third way? Meaning that when she hands the silver from the raw material, mm-hmm, and he makes something of it, the machinery and the stuff, thing, so he in effect
very good
acquired it. That, so when she pays it, it's as though she's buying it.
You're right. You're not. What you're really doing is you're giving more clarification of the first approach. Meaning, within the first approach of your kone b'shvach kli, how are you kone b'shvach kli? And the answer is what you're saying, shinui. Meaning, shinui is probably, the Gemara doesn't say this, and but probably what the way he's kone is through the shinui.
Right.
Okay. So Mar Savra Umen Kone B'Shvach Kli, Mar Savra Ein Umen Kone B'Shvach Kli. So the Gemara says, and that's the machlokus between the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir as to whether or not the Umen is Kone. So now, if the Umen is Kone, if the craftsman is actually acquiring that Shvach, that increased value, so now when he's handing her something that he owned over to her. Whereas if you hold Ein Umen Kone B'Shvach Kli, so then he's not giving her anything of his to her. Ebay Sam, the Gemara now is going to give a third explanation. So let's say that the craftsman does not acquire the increased value of the jewelry. As far as his wages are concerned, they are accrued incrementally. And you cannot be mekadesh a woman with a loan, with the forgiveness of a loan. So now, We basically painted ourselves into a corner. So if you take all three of these positions into account, he didn't acquire the increased value. The wages are accrued incrementally. So it's all viewed as a loan. And you cannot be mekash with a loan. So now when you take all three of these into account, the hachba ma'iskina, so what could we possibly now be? How could there possibly be a machlokas? Kigon, shosef la nofach mishalo. So what he did in order to create the jewelry is he added a stone of his own into the jewelry. Mar Savar, just one more second. Mar Savar milva pruta daita pruta, or Mar Savar daita milva over pluta dahani tonight. So the Gemara says, and now basically what he's doing when he's giving her the jewelry is really there are two things that he's handing to her. Number one, that extra stone that he added. That is a physical item of value. But also, there is a loan as well. There's owed money because she owes him for all the work that he did. And he's now ready to forgive it. So now, there is a milva and a pruta. And the question, which we touched on earlier in the Masechta, which the Gemara over here is also now discussing, is when a woman is being given both, what is she focusing on? The milva or the pruta? Now, if she wants the kedushin to be good, to be effective, she should be focusing on the pruta. But the Gemara says, as we're going to see in just a moment, this is a machlokas tanaim. Detanya. We learned in the brisa. Bischasha asit imach in the mekudeshes. Bischasha eese imach mekudeshes. If a man wants to be mekadesh a woman with money she owed him for past services provided, kedushin is not going to be effective. But with wages that I will do for you, the kedushin is going to be valid. Rabbi Nachman Omer bischarsha esa imach in mekudeshes, v'kosher kein bischarsha esa imach. According to Rabbi Nachman, it's not going to be a valid kedushin, not for services already provided, not for future services. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi Omer be'emes amru. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi said be'emes. Be'emes means this is halacha, and that is bein bischarsha esa imach, bein bischarsha esa imach in mekudeshes, v'im host of lo nafach mishalom mekudeshes. And according to Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, if the craftsman adds on a little bit of his own stones into the jewelry, the kedushin is going to be valid. Bein Tanakama ben la Rabbi Nasan ika ben auschiros. Now, as far as the Tanakama and Rabbi Nasan, so that machlokus is very simple After having learned today's daf, and that is, it's just a question of how to look at schirus. Is schirus accrued incrementally, or is it only owed at the end? And bein Rabbi Nachman Rabbi Yehuda Anasi kemenau milva pruta, and the machlokus between Rabbi Nachman versus Rabbi Yehuda Anasi is that when a man hands over to a woman an item that he actually introduced into the jewelry plus all the owed wages, so now it's a milva and a pruta. And what the issue is over here is when she's being handed both. I know she's not being handed, forgiven wages. But when both are presented to her, what is she focusing on? Mar Savra milva pruta daite a milva, or Mar Savra daite a pruta. So that's the machlokas between these tanaim. So that would be another way to explain the machlokas between the brisa of the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir. Okay, let's quickly recap. And it's actually pretty simple to recap today's daf. The recap is, not only is Rav right, but it's not even subject to a machlokas tanayim. Meaning, Rav's of the opinion that you're mekadesh a woman with a milva, she owes you money, and and you want to mekadesh her by forgiving the loan, it's simply not going to work. Why? Milva lo hotzah nitna. Because once you gave her the loan money, so that money is intended to be spent immediately. And therefore, it's not your money anymore, it's her money. And when you're trying to be mekadesh her after the origination of the loan, it's not going to work because there simply is no physical money present that you're actually handing over to her. And what we did over the course of today is go through three separate brisas where from all three brises, it sounds like it's a machlokas tanaim. And what the Gemara did for all three brises is deflect. Meaning that we needed to reinterpret each one of the brises. Well, they wouldn't reinterpret the brisa, but we explained each one of the three brises today based on the premise that no one is arguing with Rav. And then the brises are all hinging on separate issues. And to go through all three brises and the various explanations of the brises would take a while. But brisa number one, four different explanations. Bryson number two, three different explanations. And Bryson number three, another three different explanations. And that's for the most part today's daf.